Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
You are listening to We Saw the Devil, an investigative and conversational true crime podcast that deep dives into fascinating criminal cases that are solved, unsolved, or ongoing. From America's Lori Vallow to Germany's Armin Mivas, we examine and discuss the world's most shocking cases. If you're enjoying the show, don't forget to follow us online. Check us out at WeSawTheDevil.com and WeSawTheDevil on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And don't forget, you can become part of the show by backing us on Patreon. Hello everyone, you are listening to We Saw the Devil. This is Robin, and I am here with an unexpected episode. You see, I had an entirely different episode planned and written out. Things changed a little bit. The first part of this episode is going to be a quick Gabby Petito case update. I mean, that's a name we haven't heard in a while, right? But there is active movement on that case, so I would like to provide an update for it. Secondly, there is a wild case right now coming out of Louisiana that I just have to talk about, and I want all of your thoughts and opinions on this case. I went down the rabbit hole and actually restructured this entire episode just so I could cover it and talk about it. But before we get into those, let's just take 20 seconds to do our housekeeping. You are listening to We Saw the Devil. I'm your host, Robin. You can find us at WeSawTheDevil.com, where you can find us across all social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, as well as our Patreon, where you can financially back the show. Outside of that, if you're liking the show, loving it, digging it, want to support the content, please take 10 seconds of your day and leave a 5-star review. It means the absolute world to us. That would be greatly, greatly appreciated. That was like a minute and a half long intro, guys. I am proud of myself. Let's just go ahead and get the news out of the way. Last year, the Gabby Petito case happened, and it quite literally took over the world for a few weeks. It was basically the sole topic on Twitter and TikTok. Everyone was posting hourly updates of, like, you know, the supposed sightings of Brian Laundry. If you were somehow asleep, in a coma, or otherwise had a life, unlike most of us last year while all this was taking place, I mean, first, I guess, congratulations. It was a wild time. For those of you not aware, in short, 22-year-old blonde-haired, blue-eyed Gabby Petito went missing while she was on a road trip with her boyfriend, 23-year-old Brian Laundry. They were doing that hashtag van life and documenting their travels across the western United States. Suddenly, Gabby stopped communicating with her family and sent them a couple odd text messages. So they reached out to the Laundries. Gabby was living with Brian, Brian Laundry, with his family at the time. The Laundries ignored them entirely. So the Petito family, they had no idea what had happened to Gabby. They were incredibly worried, so they went public with their pleas. And the internet absolutely exploded. Some news outlets deemed the intense coverage as that of the missing white woman effect, highlighting the increased spotlight that pretty white women have over missing women of color. Men's rights activists picked up on it, claiming that Brian himself was a victim because of that police chest cam footage of Gabby Petito admitting to hitting him. Trauma and domestic violence advocates used it as a pivotal example and a teachable moment of police needing additional training in recognizing the signs of domestic violence. If you recall, the police sided with Brian during that infamous roadside stop, and that was caught on police chest cam. Brian changed his stories multiple times, and there was telltale evidence that he was likely the aggressor and the abuser. Panelists argued on the morning talk shows, and people argued all over social media. Well, it turned out that Brian Laundry did in fact murder Gabby Petito. After he murdered her, he took her van and credit cards and drove back home to his Florida home that he shared with his parents. He took a handgun and went into a local nature reserve where he unalived himself. Except no one knew it. The public did not know this. People supposedly saw him everywhere, from a Florida swamp to the Appalachian Trail to mid-state New York. And Brian Laundrie's parents refused to talk to Gabby Petito's family. Not a word. Through all of this, they immediately hired an attorney who made a whole host of offensive and tone-deaf comments to the media. I mean, it was just absolutely revolting, really. People started to camp outside of their home, asking where Brian was. But the Laundrie family never spoke. Finally, police located Brian Laundrie's remains and discovered a journal entry where he did, in fact, admit to killing her. And then Gabby Petito's family filed a lawsuit against the Laundries. They filed the lawsuit on the grounds of, quote, intentional infliction of emotional distress. They're claiming that Chris and Roberta Laundrie knew that Brian had murdered their daughter, and instead of telling the truth, chose to be silent while they searched for Gabby. The lawsuit also says that Chris and Roberta blocked Petito and Schmidt's phone numbers and also their Facebook pages so that they could not reach out individually. Basically, their actions were intentional and inflicted emotional distress. An excerpt from the suit reads, quote, "While Joseph Petito and Nicole Schmidt were desperately searching for information concerning their daughter, Christopher Laundrie and Roberta Laundrie were keeping the whereabouts of Brian Laundrie secret, and it is believed they were making arrangements for him to leave the country." Stephen Bertolino, the Laundrie's attorney, claims that they were protected under the First Amendment of the Constitution. And this is so incredibly interesting to me. You see, 3 months ago, back in March, regarding this lawsuit, Stephen Bertolino said the following, quote, "Assuming everything the Petitos allege in their lawsuit is true, which we deny, this lawsuit does not change the fact that the Laundries had no obligation to speak to law enforcement or any third party, including the Petito family. This fundamental legal principle renders the Petitos' claims to be baseless under the law." And it should come as no surprise that Chris and Roberta filed a petition to dismiss this lawsuit entirely. And this entire thing is fascinating to me, because from everything that I've read, it's true that they were under no obligation to report this to anyone. And also, being direct family members too, they, I believe, are allowed an extra bit of wiggle room. But it's going to be very, very interesting to see how this turns out. Because later today, Wednesday, June 22nd, the first hearing for the Petitos lawsuit will be heard by Judge Hunter W. Carroll. He'll hear arguments by Joe Petito and Nicole Schmidt, as well as Chris and Roberta Laundrie. Everyone is going to be present. At this moment, there is actually a jury trial tentatively scheduled for August of next year, but it's not guaranteed. A final decision of the outcome of all of this will be made later this summer. If you're interested in watching the hearing, WFLA, the original Florida news outlet that had full-scale coverage of this case, will be broadcasting it live online. And I just wanted to put this out there and give a quick update, because I feel like the United States may be divided on a lot of issues right now. We have guns, politics, abortion, all sorts of things. But I would say it's pretty united in its abject hatred of the Laundrie family. And for that, I am very thankful.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
So the real case that I wanted to cover for this episode is a hot mess out of the state of Louisiana. Some of you may be familiar with this, but I haven't really seen anyone talking about it, so I really wanted to cover it. It's actually relatively rare that I read a news headline, stop everything I'm doing, and dive head first into a complete rabbit hole, and then come out more confused than I was going into it. And that's actually what happened earlier today. I was just reading over news headlines. I had this nice episode planned out, fully written out and outlined, and that got totally temporarily shelved because of this article. The headline was, Louisiana man accused of raping a woman, then getting custody of their child. Now, with all of the Roe v. Wade stuff going on, you hear about cases like this. Well, if you know this is overturned, X, Y, and Z, you know, it's kind of discussed, but it's like, holy shit, it actually happened, was my first knee-jerk reaction. Of course, my blood pressure rose like a mushroom cloud from an atomic bomb, and I just had to read more about it. And y'all, if you guys stumble across this headline or know the story, don't take it at face value. Because I was that person that I rail against all the time. I saw the headline, I was like, oh shit, and immediately shared it to my Facebook. And then after I started reading more about it, I actually deleted it. There's so much more to this case, and it may not actually be as simple as the headline suggests. This is the case of Krista Abelseth and the man she accuses of raping her, John Barnes. Let's start by going back to 2005. Hammond, Louisiana. Krista Abelseth was 16 years old and decided to go to a local bar, Ponchatoula Pub, to drink with two of her friends. A brother of one of her friends was there with 30-year-old John Barnes, a military veteran. As the time for the final call came, Krista realized that her friend who had driven them there had left, stranding her. So she asked John if he would give her a ride home. He agreed. What isn't agreed upon is what happened next. Crystal Abelseth claims that she left the bar in John's car, believing that he was taking her home. She says that she must have been drugged, as she then blacked out and woke up in his home in Ponchatoula, naked on the bathroom floor. She alleges that she had been raped on the couch while she was unconscious. John Barnes, however, has a very different story. I'll just quote him directly. He says, quote, "It's a lie. She was in a bar with a fake ID, telling everyone she was a college student. I had no idea she was 16, and I didn't rape her. That is absolutely, unequivocally false." Krista Abelseth did not report her rape to police and also did not tell her family or friends. Instead, she went home and carried on with her life until she realized that she was pregnant. She was in a relationship with a man named James Threaton, nickname Possum. James Threaton signed the birth certificate as the father. He believed that he himself was, in fact, the father. The little girl took his last name. She called him Daddy. Krista's friends and family thought that he was the father. For the first 5 years of this little girl's life, that's how they lived in their little family unit. James Threaton would actually go on to commit a handful of burglaries and robberies and ended up incarcerated in a local jail in 2009. Krista would take her daughter to visit him in the jail, telling her that they were going to go see Daddy. And then in 2010, all hell would break loose. Somehow, John Barnes discovered that Krista had a child and realized that he could potentially be the father. He immediately reached out to her. A petition for paternity was initiated by Krista Abelseth in 2011. DNA samples were taken from Barnes and Threaton, who was still incarcerated at that time, and it was determined that John Barnes was in fact the father of the little girl. He was elated. Both Krista and John voluntarily agreed to joint custody in October of 2011. The girl's birth certificate was amended, and John Barnes was listed as her father. Not only that, but neither party asked for any child support at the time. It seemed to be a positive arrangement. John sat by and quickly grew dismayed that Krista Abelseth was taking his daughter into the jail to visit a man who was not her biological father. He claimed that it was emotionally damaging to the little girl, especially since Krista was telling her that she had two fathers. So he decided to file for full custody. In January of 2013, Krista filed court documents claiming that John had a separate ongoing custody case with a woman named Amy Ball. Amy had actually filed domestic violence charges against him. Krista did win a court case, though. At that time, she was seeking child support from Barnes. John was ordered to pay Krista $428 a month in child support, which he did for a couple of years. In May of 2015, John again sued to gain full custody of his daughter. Krista claims that because of Barnes's repeated petitions for custody and constant fighting, she was forced to repeatedly relive her rape, and she contacted a trauma counselor. The counselor let her know that she was still within the statute of limitations for reporting the rape that had allegedly occurred years before. So just a month later, in June, Krista Abelseth filed a police report accusing John Barnes of raping her 10 years prior. Sadly, and for whatever reason, Krista Abelseth's report was never assigned to a detective and was never even investigated. Tangipahoa Sheriff Daniel Edwards released a statement last week that read, quote, "In tracing this case back to the time the initial complaint was filed on July 1st, 2015, it was discovered that the report never made it through the proper channels within the department to be assigned for investigation. Our department absolutely dropped the ball, and we must simply own our mistake. This is a mistake, however, that simply has never been a problem before or since, and we must make sure to keep it that way." In August of 2015, Judge Jeffrey Cash took over the case. John Barnes claimed that Krista was still taking their child to see James Threaton in jail, and that she had been married 3 times in 6 years, with many more boyfriends in between coming in and out of his daughter's life. 6 months later, a split custody agreement was reached, and Krista Abelseth was ordered to pay $78.41 to John Barnes each month. That amount eventually increased to $117.72 per month by 2017. The judge issued the child support decision based on Krista's potential earnings. Again, potential earnings. He reasoned that she had a master's degree, she should be able to pull out an average of $80,000 a year.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Except Krista was making $35,000 working part-time as a waitress at Ponchatoula Seafood and Steak, according to the court filings. John Barnes, on the other hand, was making $102,000 a year with his own technology company, as well as working as a contractor for an oil company. John's relationship with his then 14-year-old daughter was contentious at best. By all accounts, as a military veteran, he ran a tight ship with many rules and a curfew. He wanted her to be focused on academics and her future. That is apparently the opposite of how Krista had raised her up until that point. Krista allowed her to drink, have sex, have boyfriends, and come and go largely as she pleased. In December of 2020, John Barnes once again sued for full custody. He accused Krista of being a poor mother, allowing their daughter to make out with a 17-year-old boy, have sex with a different 18-year-old boy, and providing her with a secondary cell phone with full social media access. You see, John had given his daughter one with parental controls after finding her sexting a boyfriend and uploading sexually explicit TikToks online. He wrote in that petition that Krista had told the girl to, quote, make any allegations against him so that he would be arrested. Both parents at this point went to the judge and petitioned for sole custody. The judge actually denied both of them. Instead, he ordered that secondary cell phone be provided to the court to be examined. Krista refused to provide the phone, instead coming back 5 months later saying that the cell phone had actually been wiped clean, the cloud cleaned out, and then it was stolen. Judge Jeffrey Cash held Krista in contempt of the custody arrangement for letting her daughter have a secondary phone, banned the girl from having another phone, and then ordered both parents to have logins for all of her social media accounts. Krista was also made responsible for John Barnes's $500 in legal fees. Then everything just came to a head about 4 months ago. This past February, Krista accused John of drugging and raping their daughter. Yes, drugging and raping his own daughter. On February 25th, Krista filed a petition that states, quote, "Minor child contacted me on February 23rd, 2022, with the suspicion that her father had drugged and sexually assaulted her 2 nights in a row. My daughter was conceived as the product of the defendant raping me when I was a minor child of 16 years of age. I suspect drugs were used by him to sedate me as I was unable to move while he raped me. Now it is alleged that he has committed the same heinous crime on our 15-year-old daughter." Krista says she took her to the Children's Hospital of New Orleans, where physicians confirmed, quote, evidence of forced entry congruent with sexual assault. John was banned from seeing his daughter for a full month while authorities investigated the claims. There were no criminal charges, though. A hearing officer ruled on March 18th of this year that, quote, the medical evidence does not support the allegations in petition. This was just 3 days before John filed for temporary sole custody, accusing Krista of lying about sexual abuse in order to get full custody and have him arrested. The judge apparently agreed, as John was not arrested. John was actually awarded full custody of his daughter, and Krista is only allowed to see her every other Sunday, supervised, for just a few hours. Krista responded to this ruling by filing a motion to terminate Barnes's parental rights based on the child allegedly being conceived through the commission of a felony rape. For that, a hearing is being held next month on July 15th. And don't forget that even if the sex had been consensual between Barnes and Abelseth back in 2005, it would have amounted to statutory rape. In Louisiana in 2005, the age of consent was 17, the same as it is today. Something about this case is incredibly, incredibly fishy. John Barnes admits to sleeping with Krista Abelseth when she was 16. He claims that he had no idea. He claims that she was in the bar, drinking, had a fake ID, and told everyone that she was a college student, so he had no reason to further doubt that. Now, only after John Barnes has stepped forward to try to take custody of his daughter, has Krista Abelseth stepped forward with these allegations. Now, we know that a lot of women don't report their sexual assaults. That's been ingrained into us. Women don't report out of fear, out of shame, out of embarrassment. And I'm going to say something that may be controversial or may make people angry, and I'll just wait for the barrage of bad reviews. I do not believe that believe all women is helpful, or automatically believe women is what that says. I feel like that absolutism is unhelpful. I feel like the slogan should be more like, don't dismiss women, or give women a fair hearing, or, hey, what about that due process? And that's also tricky because we know as women as well that historically the system isn't always fair. Add on to that the fact that false rape allegations are so rare, there's a greater chance of a man being raped than there is of a false rape allegation. This particular case is in a very, very tricky and awkward place, and it's going to be really interesting to see how it plays out. Obviously, my heart goes out to every single person in this case. It goes out to Krista if she did endure this. You know, she's making the media rounds, and she's been on Fox News, Good Morning America, and like all of these different TV shows talking about this. That can't be easy. I feel for their daughter, who is now being brought into this very, very, very publicly. And I also feel for John Barnes, who, if he feels as though his daughter is not having the best chance at life and he is at the center of false allegations, then that is also terrible. He's likely going to lose his livelihood because of it. So overall, it is just a very, very, very tragic case. But more than anything, I want to know what you guys think. Do you think it's a little suspicious? Like, all of this is a little suspicious? Do you feel like there could be something wrong? Do you automatically believe Krista? Should he ever have been even granted partial custody or split custody? I want to know. Leave us a comment on Instagram or Facebook, or hell, send us an email, info@wesawthedevil.com. But that's it for today, guys. Thank you so much for listening. I just had to get this out there. The next episode is going to be a fun episode of facts, like really disturbing and creepy facts that you may not know. And these are going to surround everything from death, historical figures, murder, true crime, and everything in between. Really disturbing facts that you probably don't want to know, but I'm going to tell you anyway. Again, I'm Robin. You've been listening to We Saw the Devil. Check us out at wesawthedevil.com. From there, all across social media. Until next crime.